Hello, everyone. Welcome to the NPI webinar. Thank you for joining us today. Sorry that we are just a little bit late getting started. We were trying to figure out some of the technology in our office. We had such an overwhelming response that we're using multiple conference lines, webinar links, and et cetera. We've got people that are participating from the webinar all over the world, which is really exciting. My name is Matt Johnson. I'm the Communications Director for USAID's Office of Acquisition Assistance. I'm also USAID's industry liaison. Wanted to just welcome you to the webinar. If you are joining, I sent an email out earlier today. If you want to be registered for the event, I sent an email out earlier today with a link to the slide deck that we will be using for the webinar. So I encourage you to have that up if you're on the line. If you do run into any issues, we've got two conference lines as well as the webinar link set up, and we are recording both the audio for this webinar as well as the actual presentation webinar that's taking place. So our plan is to post this on our NPI website, hopefully sometime early next week. So we've got a number of folks that you'll hear from today. Rather than introduce them and you kind of forget their voice, I'm going to have them briefly introduce themselves right before they get up to talk, just kind of give their name and title of who they are. But really, in this webinar today, we want to give you an overview of the new partnerships initiative. Why does the new partnerships initiative exist? How does it work? What are the funding opportunities to date? What have we done so far? Talk about some next steps for NPI, things that are happening, as well as some new funding opportunities that are coming available. In addition, with a part of the new partnerships initiative, there are some new definitions that are new to USAID that we want to spend some time just sort of going through and explaining and articulating them to you. And then finally, we do want to take some questions at the end of this. So if you do have a question as we're going through the presentation, you can email them to us at npi@usaid.gov. Once again, that's npi@usaid.gov. We're happy to take your questions as we go through the webinar if you need clarification on anything during that. So once again, I just want to thank you all for joining. And I want to turn the webinar over to Randy Tift, who's a senior advisor in the Office of Acquisition Assistance here, and he's helping to lead the new partnerships initiative.
Thank you, Matt. Pleasure to be with you all. And I will start by introducing some of the earliest work we did within USAID under transformation, which was an agency, still is, an agency reform effort. So the acquisition and assistance strategy was developed as part of this to transform our programs. It was developed under the Effective Partnering and Procurement Reform Project. And as part of EPPR, we conducted an external listening tour. We met with more than 250 partners to understand the opportunities and obstacles to working with USAID. In addition, the agency established internal working groups comprised of staff from Washington and the field that included more than 125 people. So the ANA strategy reflects the input and ideas of the agency's staff and partners, and NPI is seeking to model or demonstrate how to put these principles into practice. So the strategy outlines five guiding principles and what we call shifts. There are 10 shifts in the strategy, and we'll talk about a few of those a little bit later. So these changes to how the agency does business involve two that are most closely connected with the new partnerships initiative. The first is diversifying the agency's partner base. We'll discuss that a bit more in a moment. With this guiding principle, we're focusing on USAID's need to target both new and underutilized partners. There are a large number of organizations doing outstanding development work that the agency has not been able to partner with. The second guiding principle focuses on how we partner. One of the clear messages from the EPPR listening tour was the agency's processes and requirements had become complex and cumbersome. So when a small or a less experienced partner in terms of experience with USAID tried to work with us, they often had a very difficult time. And yet, they're effective actors in their own right, especially in the partner country. So we're shifting in these ways to try and empower our partners and our prospective partners in how we design, how we solicit programs, and how we make awards, and how we implement. So we're being less prescriptive, more collaborative, I would say more adaptive, and we're trying to simplify access for new and local partners. So Since USAID's creation in 1961, the amount of funding as well as the number of organizations that provide and implement international assistance has grown exponentially. At USAID's founding, about 80% of the money flowing from the United States to the developing world was federal funding, that is, official development assistance. Today, that figure is less than 10%. Private investment, private philanthropy, remittances, other non-federal government funding, other donors constitute the vast majority of today's assistance. Our administrator, Mark Green, has said that there are literally trillions of dollars that could be mobilized for development if we learn to better leverage partnership, catalyze the private sector, and amplify the efforts of foundations and nonprofits that have significant private development assistance. So despite the explosion of these partners, the vast majority of our funding has remained within a relatively small circle of large and often effective implementing organizations. From 2017 to this last fiscal year, 2019, the numbers have remained about the same. 60% of obligations went to just 25 partners, and more than 80% of total USAID funding obligations went to just 75 or fewer partners. So the number of new partners that we've attracted year on year for about a decade has also decreased. So we see a concentration in our portfolio in too few hands, and we are really trying to take advantage of the full marketplace of ideas to advance what we call the journey to self-reliance. So a little bit more on why diversify. We're results-driven, and often our technical bureaus like global health and our sectors like education or even conflict prevention, they're doing an excellent job in achieving outcomes. But under the shift the agency is making broadly toward increasing host country or partner country self-reliance, the most important result we can really achieve is the lasting long-term capacity of those countries to lead in their own development. So our approach to diversifying is meant to strengthen our work to help these countries achieve self-reliance, providing access to local perspectives and resources, engaging and using our convening power to get highly effective development partners in stronger relationships with those countries, and diversifying to enable a range of capable partners. So we're focusing on what we call both local partners, indigenous local entities, as well as locally established partners, and we'll get to more of those definitions shortly. So with the new ANA strategy and the goal to diversify and change how we partner, we launched the new partnerships initiative on May 1st, 2019 with the release of the Conflict Prevention and Recovery Program Annual Program Statement. More on that in a few minutes. Let me just talk about the three goals of NPI. In promoting local leadership, we're continuing to provide direct awards to local actors. And some of you on this webinar will remember the Local Solutions Initiative of the past decade, which sought to give direct awards from USAID to those local entities that really have indigenous roots in our partner countries. And we made a significant shift in our program portfolios in that direction. Many of those do have strong commitment and capacity, but often their focus was on how to manage the compliance burdens of a USAID award rather than strengthening their capacity to be development actors in their own right. We'll talk more about that. The second big goal is we want to increase our techniques of collaboration and our use of a method we call co-creation that my colleague Chuck Pope will talk more about in a moment. We basically want to foster the creativity and innovation that we see being championed in the field, and to try and make our instruments of partnership more oriented to that innovation. Finally, we want to mobilize new sources of funding to sustain these partnerships and scale the impact. We mentioned that private development assistance is now a significant part of the development landscape, and yet USAID has not done a great amount to strategically leverage that funding and that commitment. So slide 8 here is where I'm going to hand in a moment to my colleague, Chuck, but I just want to say a couple of things about those shifts I referenced in the acquisition and assistance strategy. We have multiple approaches established in NPI that expand the local partnership toolbox, including empowering partners in how we design programs, the use of multiple partnering modalities, more effective ways of using co-creation, this approach that brings us to the table in a way that puts us on an equal basis with our partners, and then diversifying to engage locally. So here are just briefly three shifts that we're really seeking to pursue through NPI. First, we have broadened the definition of local partners. As I mentioned, we had a certain definition under past approaches. Now we have established what we call locally established partners, which are U.S. or international organizations that meet basic criteria for country presence, locally led operations, and they have staying power to advance the journey to self-reliance. So all of this is to strengthen our toolbox for helping partner countries lead in their own development. Second, we are focused on greater value on our traditional partners, experienced partners. Some of those that I mentioned are among the few that receive most USAID funding, but we're asking them to work differently, and we want to value those subawards to strengthen local engagement. So we're trying to craft modalities of partnership with NPI that demonstrate how subawards can be more strategically advancing the journey to self-reliance with technical oversight, compliance support, and mentoring of those local and locally established partners. And finally, I just want to say another word about capacity strengthening before I hand to Chuck. For the first time this year, missions will report not on funding obligations, which has been our past practice to measure how much we're strengthening local engagement. Rather, we're going to focus on measuring actual capacity strengthened. So we have just issued or established a new global indicator. All of our USAID missions and thus all of our partners will be reporting on this indicator. And they will also be developing NPI plans to try and strengthen their work with more partners that are receiving capacity strengthening assistance. And then we'll report on whether we have strengthened organizational performance at the end of each reporting season, and that's the calendar year. Whether you're a prime or subaward partner receiving capacity building assistance, we want to know if your organization has actually had its work strengthened by USAID funding. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Chuck, and he's going to tell you a little bit more about our partnering approaches.
Hello, everybody. My name is Chuck Pope, and I'm the Global Contracting and Agreement Officer for the New Partnerships Initiative. I've worked with many of you in the past overseas and here in America, and look forward to working with many of you in the future. While we're on this slide, I won't spend very much time because it's been up for a while. One of the things that I love to say to people, even though this is called the New Partnerships Initiative, there's really something for everybody in PI. And I'll get to it a little bit later, but we are already achieving results under NPI regarding what we set out to do. So certainly local entities, Randy just talked about locally established partners, and later in the presentation we'll talk a little bit more about that. But we're really excited to also be able to describe how U.S. and locally based small businesses can get involved with NPI, and my colleague Jessica Faber will talk about that a bit later. Subawards, our vision is our traditional implementing partners have a large role to play under NPI through subawards, and we'll talk about that in a little bit later. And then we're also very excited about our ability to make direct awards to partners that leverage significant private and non-U.S. Government funding. Talking about subaward approaches, so facilitative partnering, what is that? Essentially, we recognize that our traditional implementing partners have a role to play in building the capacity of new and underutilized partners, and we would like to work with you all on that. As the slide indicates, we're looking at primarily a mentoring role for you all, and we would be looking at 50 to 75% of the total award funding being passed through to subs. But again, you all working in partnership with us to build the capacity of these new and underutilized partners. And then transition awards. Transition awards have been around for quite some time. Again, that's in the ADS, the automated directive systems that talks about transition awards. And that the idea there is that these local recipients would get the award in the future. So Randy introduced how co-creation works under MPI. So one of the things I tell people all the time, we have a site that Matt Johnson will talk about later. You keep your eyes on that. But the funding opportunities that occur under MPI will be posted on grants.gov. And if they're for acquisition, the betasam.gov site. We envision in almost every set of circumstances a two-step process with MPI, which is essentially submitting to us a very short concept that is hopefully quickly reviewed, and if everything looks good, we move to a co-creation process. And we are innovative and flexible enough that we think that we can achieve the co-creation process under both acquisition and assistance. The next slide, the new partnerships initiative flowchart, is one of my favorite slides. We've spent a lot of time working on this, and really this visually represents how the new partnerships initiative process works, and I started talking about it a little bit. So I'll go quickly through this. So you all, when we issue a funding opportunity, will submit a concept note. We at USAID, and it will be a short concept note, we at USAID will form a review committee, and generally one of two things will happen. So if, you know, everybody's got a great concept, but for whatever reason, if it does not pass merit review, then your concept is evergreen. Remember that word. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. It's a very exciting concept. So your concept would be evergreen. But let's say, hey, good news, your concept passes merit review. So then we go into co-creation, and our vision is co-creation is generally led by the technical teams at USAID. Co-creation can occur many different ways. It could be one-on-one. It could be in a large conference setting. It could be in a small group setting. But we feel very strongly that that results, co-creation results in, you know, the best concept being chosen to for full application. Again, so one or two things happen there. So I'll get to the happy news. If the co-creation is unsuccessful and we don't, in fact, ask you for a full application or full proposal, your process is, there's that magical word again, evergreen. So if co-creation is successful, then we would ask you for a full application or a full proposal. And then those of you that have worked with USAID before, that process would resemble our normal traditional process, and the contracting folks would take that process over again. So again, this is probably one, if you seek to really understand how the new partnerships flows, this is a great chart for that. I had mentioned previously that we are achieving astounding results already with the new partnerships initiative. There are two annual program statements out there, the Global Health Annual Program Statement and the Conflict Prevention and Recovery Annual Program Statement. There have been a number of funding opportunities issued under those annual program statements. My colleague Jessica Faber will talk a little bit later about the Small Business Applied Research program. I mentioned that MPI is already achieving results. We are very proud of, for the first time in 16 years, MPI was able to make direct awards to first-time local recipients in Iraq. Very excited about that. We quickly awarded two major cooperative agreements in global health, and my colleague will talk more about this, four new SBAR awards in Cambodia. And with that, we are going to talk, my colleague is going to talk about Global Health MPI.
Great. Well, thank you, Chuck. Yeah, I'm going to briefly talk about the awards we've made under Global Health MPI Annual Program Statement. We're very excited because we are working with a really good group of partners here to do some very interesting work. So under the two rounds that Chuck talked about here, the community health networks and the expanded health partnerships. We've made two awards to date with additional awards to follow. And those two awards are the first one's to Palladium. Now, Palladium is actually an established partner, but in this case, Palladium will be subgranting 60% of the total award to new and underutilized partners, and also building the capacity of those partners to directly manage USAID funding in the future. The choice of countries that this award will work in will be really determined by mission interest, and the focus area really will be kind of driven by what the mission priorities are. The second award we have is to an underutilized USAID partner, World Relief. And this is really for World Relief to strengthen maternal and health community maternal and child health services across four countries, Haiti, Uganda, Malawi, and South Sudan. And again, our expectation and our belief is that World Relief will work with the missions in these countries to, you know, implement these priority health interventions that we believe are going to be really effective in delivering the results that we look for in maternal and child health. In addition, the Chuck also mentioned we have a third round under the Global Health APS, and this one was issued not centrally but by USAID Zambia. And that one focuses on accelerating HIV control to the delivery of prevention care and support services for orphans and vulnerable children. That APS is actually still open. The deadline for submission of concept papers is December 3rd. So that's pretty much what I've got to cover on the Global Health APS. I'll now turn it over to my colleague.
Our colleague, Austin, who's going to join us to provide a little bit of information about the Conflict Prevention and Recovery Program.
Great. Thank you, Matt. And good to talk to all of you today. So the Conflict Prevention and Recovery Program is an annual program statement that was put out by the DACHA Bureau. What we were trying to do here is create a mechanism that facilitates missions soliciting and making awards to local partners and locally engaged partners via the identified criteria that Brandy spoke about earlier in the presentation. Our mechanism focused on pairing the NPI criteria that we've heard about with something that we in DACHA Bureau have struggled with, which is what we've called the missing middle. And that is countries that have not fallen into conflict yet, but are trending towards conflict, or those that have recently emerged from conflict, but aren't ready for full development programming. What we've realized in the research and studies that we've done is, in both of those circumstances, pre-conflict and post-conflict, there is a need to partner with local organizations that not only have the trust of communities that they're working in, but also will be there for the long term and will have continued access in that community to continue the work even after USAID funding has ended. So for the DACHA Bureau, we're really looking at what happens before we talk about long-term development programs, but after we've talked about the crisis or conflict being resolved. The APS, as I said, is a vehicle for mission. It's unfunded currently, so there's no central funding. We have had four addenda issued under that APS, one from USAID Bangladesh, one from USAID Indonesia, one from the Global Development Lab, and one from USAID Iraq. As Chuck spoke about, we have had six awards go directly to local organizations in Iraq, and we are anticipating awards from the Global Development Lab, USAID Indonesia, and USAID Bangladesh shortly. What we found from these initial grouping of missions, I think, has been very positive, and we're looking forward to working with additional missions to come up with more opportunities to engage local actors in these very sensitive contexts to see how we can pair the MPI objectives with the programmatic kind of DACHA objectives to facilitate greater programmatic impact. With that, I'll stop and hand it back to Matt.
Thank you, Austin.
Thanks, Austin. My name is Jessica Faber, and I am an NPI advisor, and I'm also the lead contracting officer for the Small Business Applied Research Program, which is just finishing up its second iteration, the Encore round, and has now graduated to full-fledged program after the two pilots. So the goal of the Small Business Applied Research Program, or SBAR as we like to call it, is to expand USAID's access to emerging technology, products, services, and scientific applications developed by U.S. small businesses via streamlined one-to-one co-creation. So via SBAR, this is where we're trying to bring in U.S.-based small businesses into the NPI fold, and it's been a very exciting addition. So four awards were recently made from USAID Cambodia, and these awards were super quick. So when we utilize SBAR, we can get from concept papers to award rather quickly, and it's exciting to watch these innovations in action. So four awards that were made recently were to Nickel Global Solutions, that is providing new technologies for Cambodian citizens to track the quality and efficiency of selected one-window public services. Another one is with Development Institute, LLC, which will introduce tools and technologies to support Cambodians to monitor and report on waste management services and practices in two separate provinces. Triangle Environmental Health Initiatives, LLC, which will introduce new systems to support Cambodians to monitor and report on waste management services and practices in two provinces. And finally, Cloudburst Consulting Group, which will strengthen local organizations' ability to mitigate risk, increase financial security, and move towards organizational self-reliance. So SBAR is unique in that USAID does not have a small business innovation research program like many other agencies do. We utilize applied research and development. And our program is worldwide, and we have many different program areas and solution types now that it's a full-fledged program. So it goes from agriculture and food security in areas, subtopics such as improved yields and resilience, cold storage and other solutions to fight hunger and strengthen food security, water and sanitation to expand access to clean water and water conservation to promote hygiene and to fight preventable diseases, natural resources management to increase local resource management and benefits. And this can include things like clean energy, off-grid energy alternatives, and energy efficiency, digital development. And these are efforts that foster an inclusive, open, and secure development ecosystem at country level and support the responsible use of digital tools and technology in USAID programs as delineated in the forthcoming USAID Digital Strategy, Global Health, Services Standardization, Sector Network Strengthening, Training and Accreditation, and Global Stability. Through improved governance, including transparency and citizen engagement, inclusive economic growth, and local ownership through capacity strengthening. And while SBAR does not currently have anything out on the street and ready for partners to apply to, we will in the near future, so please keep your eyes peeled.
Thank you, Jessica. I want to turn it over now to Brian Conklin to talk to us a little bit about the MPI Incubator.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Brian Conklin. I'm managing USAID's Partnerships Incubator, which is a $14 million three-year project that's designed to support and facilitate the MPI the partnership initiative. The incubator is predominantly an internal to USAID project, but it has both an internal and an external function. Internally, the project is really designed to support USAID's capacity to work with new partners. And so all the things that Randy and others have been talking about today, part of what the incubator will do is work with missions to help them understand how to implement the MPI initiative. Externally, USAID is also working to develop a set of tools for new partners, including a self-assessment tool that will help you gauge your readiness to partner with USAID. We're working to kind of lower some other barriers. I know sometimes it's a little murky to understand how to partner with USAID, and we're working to create better website and better communication tools so that new partners know how to access USAID. And then finally, there's a component within the new partnerships incubator, initiative incubator, that enables and builds capacity of new partners. And this is something that's triggered by missions and by USAID Washington. I'll be available after this presentation if there's any additional questions. But Matt, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. So this is Randy. Just to wrap up the first part of the presentation, I'll use the last bullet first and just reinforce the importance of the NPI Incubator as a resource, not only for our prospective partners, those of you who may have tried in the past to engage USAID either in the field or in Washington and submitted an application, but perhaps you didn't understand or wasn't easy to grasp the parameters, the requirements. The incubator is meant to help you with understanding better and not wasting your time in pursuing an application. So a self-assessment tool, as Brian referenced, would help you to figure out what opportunities might be the right ones and which ones you shouldn't try to engage on. We also hope the incubator is going to help our missions to adapt some of their programming to achieve the objectives, first of all, of the agency's transformation, and within that, the acquisition and assistance strategy, changing how we partner, diversifying, and then the new partnerships initiative as we demonstrate and model this approach. So I appreciate the work that Brian and many others are doing to get our incubator rolling and the work of our partner Kaizen in that process. So in addition to that, we have other next steps. We're continuing to review concept notes and co-create with many applicants in the first wave of NPI funding opportunities. This includes the likelihood of additional awards under the Global Health APS that Daryl talked about. It includes awards that are expected out of the missions in Bangladesh and Indonesia for the program that our colleague Austin talked about, conflict prevention and recovery. It also includes the likelihood of additional country addendums coming out under that vehicle. The program that Austin talked about is under the Democracy, Conflict, and Humanitarian Affairs Bureau, but I'd like to point out that part of the agency transformation is a restructure of our bureaus, and one of the bureaus that is inheriting some of the work of the DACHA Bureau is called the Conflict Prevention and Stabilization Bureau. And the CPS Bureau leadership has indicated that their hope is the learning from many of these programs under NPI will help frame some of the strategic planning and programming that comes through the Conflict Prevention and Stabilization Bureau in the future. So missions will be developing two-year plans for engaging with new partners and applying the ANA strategy principles to new partnership approaches. We will have new funding opportunities that will be issued this year and NPI plans we hope completed this year, so that gives a little better sense of what to expect at the mission level. And finally, just a dedicated staff. You've heard many of them here on this webinar so far, but I want to point out that there are many USAID programs that don't are not called NPI mechanisms, that is awards or solicitations that generate awards that use the criteria of NPI specifically are one case, but we are also supporting and encouraging programs that are NPI-like. They're adapting some of these approaches. There is one called under the Global Accelerator to End Tuberculosis. There is the TB Lawn Project, Local Organizations Network Project, that has been blazing a new trail in terms of local engagement. There are excellent programs going forward now on local engagement from our E3 Bureau team on local sustainability. And we have programs with large partners, this model we talked about in terms of facilitative partnering and enabling local partners to lead in implementation with support from experienced partners with technical and compliance challenges. The INVEST program, which is a blended finance program mobilizing private capital and led by our partner, Development Alternatives Incorporated, is one that I would encourage you to look more into. So I want to mention this illustrative range of programs that are using the strategic approaches that we've talked about so far. Finally, as we shift toward definitions, but before we do, I just want to mention new NPI funding opportunities that we can announce today. So our friends in the E3 Bureau, Education, Environment, and Economic Development, E3, have announced, and this should be on the business forecast today, at least $10 million to support new partnerships in gender equality and women's empowerment. This is a major agency and U.S. government priority that USAID is helping to lead. Women's Global Development and Prosperity is the name of the government-wide initiative. And then secondly, at least $10 million will be devoted to promote new partnerships to achieve basic and higher education outcomes. So look forward to both of those opportunities taking shape on the business forecast, which, by the way, is an award-winning business forecast within the federal government. So it's fairly easy to use.
Thanks, Randy. I want to turn it over to Chuck Pope now and just talk a little bit about some of the definition things we talked about within this slide deck related to NPI. Just seeing some of the questions come through, I know we're getting questions about, like, what does evergreen mean? How do you define, how are you tracking locally established partners? So we wanted to spend some time just kind of going through some of the key definitions for NPI. And so I'll turn it over to Chuck just to go through some of these key definitions as we talk about NPI.
Thanks, Matt. Glad to be talking to you all again. I might be joined by some of my colleagues as we discuss this. The New Partnerships Initiative is filled with innovations, and it's got a lot of innovative definitions. I will start with, I guess, the least innovative definition. New partner, as you can imagine, so that's an organization that has not received any funding from USAID as a prime or a sub-partner over the last 5 years. We introduced the notion of the underutilized partner, which we're very excited about. So that would be less than $25 million as a prime or a sub-partner from USAID over the last 5 years. For you aspiring local established partners, we do have an additional caveat. We want you to have provided more overseas development assistance than you've received in USAID in that same five-year period. Colleagues, anything to add there?
I mean, I think just this is Matt, just on the underutilized partner. I think as we did as a part of EPPR, I know Randy talked about, we did an external listening tour meeting with 250 organizations, and I would say we realized there was sort of a missing middle in the work that we were doing. And so our hope is, you know, this underutilized definition caveat helps to capture some of that missing middle that we realized as we were doing our external listening tour. We're often excluded from the work that we were doing.
So local entity, you know, there's a lot of specifics here. As you can imagine, you have to be organized under the laws of the country. You have to be majority owned by individuals. So again, this is a main eligibility criterion when we're looking at concepts when we've set it aside for local entities. Now here's, again, this very exciting concept that I think some of my colleagues will also want to get involved with, this notion of the locally established partner, to sort of get back to what Matt had talked about, the missing middle. And one of the things that we found in this listening tour is, you know, there are a number of locally established partners that just weren't doing business with us anymore and that have, you know, huge inroads into many of the communities that we want to be working with. So we wanted to make sure that under NPI, the notion of locally established partner was included. So as you can imagine, Randy touched on this before, would have needed to maintain continuous operations in country for the last 5 years. That's demonstrated by, you know, a local bank account, local staff being 50% of office personnel. And we also want to look at demonstrated links to the local community. A governing body or a board of directors, if you will, that are a majority of local citizens. Colleagues, anything you wanted to add on locally established partner?
We might get to some questions about it.
Okay. All right, now the next slide, these exciting definitions. We saved the most exciting for last as a build-up, but another great achievement that we had under NPI is a more flexible definition of leverage. Some of you that have worked with USAID before may remember a 1-to-1 type leverage ratio. Under NPI, that is 1-to-2, so 50% of the proposed value of the award. We think that leverage is a very powerful resource that can be brought to our project, so NPI wants to encourage leverage. So evergreening, that concept that keeps popping up. What I like to say under NPI is we don't ever really say no. We say no to now. We say maybe. Because what we have found is we will run these competitions, and, of course, we have to select concepts to move forward with. And, you know, what happens to great concepts that didn't make the cut? Well, for them to participate, they have to reapply to competitions throughout the world. Well, under evergreening, once you submit a concept note to us or an application if it's got to that stage, unless you give us an explicit statement, we can take that concept note and plug it in later, maybe more funding. You know, this happens all the time at USAID. Maybe there's more funding 6 months down the line. So instead of having to go back to square one and reconstitute a competition or a funding opportunity, we can pluck that concept and move forward with it. Let's say that you submitted something to Tanzania, but we find out that maybe Mozambique needs that concept. We can take your concept note, unless you told us you don't want us that to happen, and we can send it to Mozambique. So evergreening, of all the exciting things that are happening under NPI, evergreening is one of our biggest coups, if you will, to get the agency to agree to that concept. With that, I turn it back over to my other colleagues.
Thanks, Chuck. Before we go into the Q&A, I just want to just give you just a couple places just obviously to stay connected to the New Partnerships Initiative overall. You know, we have our NPI website, which is usaid.gov/NPI. We try to keep the website up to date with all of the latest resources and information, tools, upcoming funding opportunities, events, and so encourage you to check out the website on a regular basis. As we've talked about, all of the funding opportunities are posted on grants.gov, and as of last week, fbo.gov no longer exists. It's now called beta.sam.gov. Need to update our slide deck with that. And then we do have an email distribution list, which you can find on our NPI website. We try and use that to highlight new funding opportunities, major announcements. We use that list to announce this webinar. And then we always have our email address, mpi@usaid.gov, available for you to submit questions to us to receive more information. And we're always welcome to talk to you guys, talk to new partners, and help answer your questions related to the initiative. So with that, I want to turn over to just a question that we've received a lot of questions from folks online. We appreciate all the questions we've received. And so I'm just going to kind of go through and pick out some of the questions that we've got over the next 10 minutes or so that we have left for the webinar. The first question I want to, I guess, direct to you, Randy. Some of the definitions under NPI seem to have changed over the last 3 months for folks that have been following the initiative, seeming to shift more broader definition. Do you have any comments or feedback on sort of like how we're defining NPI and what that looks like?
Sure, Matt. I can give a couple examples. So the local partner definition is something we wrestled with. We felt, in looking back over the last 8 or 10 years of agency experience with this initiative I referred to, Local Solutions, which really did drive a lot of good work forward and engaged host countries to own the development objectives. But it also construed local partner very narrowly, really only an indigenous partner, not a partner that has networks outside the country or sources of funding or leadership. For example, membership on boards up to a point could qualify. And so we decided a twofold approach. One, we preserved that local entity's definition, which also has a basis in past law, appropriations bills specifically, and so it's encouraged as part of Congress's desire, U.S. congressional desire to see more local engagement. But we put alongside that existing definition, this definition, locally established partners that we've talked about. And we did so to broaden the types of organizations we considered local. U.S. or international organizations that can demonstrate adherence to the criteria that we had on the screen, and maybe, Matt, we could put it up again, would qualify as locally established partners. Now, in some NPI solicitations, this will just be an evaluative criterion. It's something that we look at to judge the quality of the applicant's local engagement and its likelihood that it will be present and contributing in that host country for years into the future, and that it's an effective contributor today, thus deserving of USAID funding. But in most cases, the eligibility criterion is this monetary threshold we talked about for new and underutilized partners, less than $25 million over 5 years, and if you are a U.S. or international organization, not a local entity, then also the second monetary threshold, which is that you've contributed more in private or non-U.S. government assistance to overseas development than you have received from USAID in that same five-year period. That's a way of determining that a partner really is a development actor in its own right. It's got a relationship and funding in that country and is already working effectively. And so the threshold of new and underutilized partner is most often where we're determining eligibility. But we also may want to know, and the global health solicitation was an example of this, we may want to focus on those particular types of partners locally established precisely because your international networks represent an asset and a likely contributor to your staying power to help that host country. So there are a lot of ways we'll work on this. But we've maintained consistency in the definition since we established it in April of this year. What organizations could be excluded? Anybody that doesn't meet the monetary threshold definitions I just gave, such as the 5 year, the amount of funding received over the 5 year period.
Thanks, Randy. Got just a couple questions, I guess, for you, Chuck. One of the questions is there a template that folks should be using for concept papers, budgets? How does that work with different APSs or funding opportunities?
Sure, I'll start to sound like a bit like a broken record. I would look at the specific funding opportunities, the rounds or the addenda. They might have extra instructions. Generally, there's not a template for a concept note or a budget. The funding opportunities will talk about the information that we need. Now, if you get to the point where we are asking for a full application, that will generally have standardized things for you to fill out. But the concept, we want to make this easy. We want to make it easy to submit. And we on purpose made the concept note submission hopefully easy for you all.
Thank you. Another question, just asking for clarification. If organizations work with USAID in one country but not in another country, are they considered a new partner in that one country? How do we look at new partners?
Well, the definitions say USAID writ large. So, you know, USAID, I use Tanzania and Mozambique. So USAID Tanzania and USAID Mozambique are considered USAID. So it would be a writ large determination. So
another question, I guess this is probably for you, Randy. MPI sounds very similar to USAID Forward from a few years ago. Found that there was a great deal of work in building capacity of local organizations. How are we tackling sort of the local capacity in the implementation of MPI?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So USAID Forward was a whole range of initiatives, but the main one of the major ones was local solutions, directing more funding to local partners, as we mentioned earlier. So just to restate a few of the things from the presentation, and these represent distinctions, broaden definition of local partner. So again, U.S. and international-based organizations, they're not domiciled in the partner country, but internationally, and they may draw upon networks and private funding resources and other assets for development. Those count now as the targets of opportunity under NPI and hopefully under a increasingly large amount of agency funding. Second, we have, as an agency, been concerned about strengthening capacity for many years, but we have never actually measured it beyond the award level. So for the first time this year, as a result of our ANA strategy and some work that has now put a global indicator in place, every mission will be required first to set a baseline and identify the number of prime and subaward partners that receive capacity strengthening assistance. Sometimes it's from our experienced traditional partners who often do a great job. But instead of measuring funding to those local partners as we did in the past, we're going to be focused on the actual capacity strengthening. And the tool we've put in place is quite good. It's been piloted by the Bureau for Food Security, and it's shown to work. And so every mission will be reporting on how well it has built the organizational performance capacity of its recipient partners. That's another difference from the USAID Forward.
That's great. Thank you. Just going through a bunch of questions. I will just want to say, as we're going through these questions, we do have a list of frequently asked questions that are available on our website, and we will try and take as many of the questions that have been submitted to us and include them into our website, our frequently asked questions website, in case we obviously won't be able to get to all the questions we're receiving now. One of the questions, Randy, is about sort of how will MPI roll out? Will it be primarily standalone APSs or other mechanisms? Sort of how will the MPI sort of roll out across the agency?
Well, the intention with these first two annual program statements, the Global Health and DACHA, was to make it as easy as possible for our missions or for our, in the Global Health case, for sectoral planners to develop addendums that would provide funding opportunities and result in the awards you've seen to date. And more in the future. So it may roll out through a similar mechanism. We don't know yet, for example, what the E3 Bureau will do in terms of the actual solicitation approach. But we do expect not only on the assistance side, but opportunities on the acquisition side, which would result in contracts. The SBAR is an example of that already under NPI, but we expect more examples. It may depend on where the targets of opportunity are.
Thank you, Randy. I want to ask another question of Chuck. One of the questions came in the listening tour, we heard from local organizations, or USAID heard from local organizations, that the grant requirements were too onerous. Is USAID proposing changes to award requirements to simplify implementation for organizations with less experience and establish capacity to manage USAID awards?
I get excited again talking about MPI, because one of the things I love to say is MPI on the assistance side can result in any assistance mechanism type. And I talked about Iraq earlier. We issued fixed amount awards to all six of those recipients in Iraq for many good reasons. But one major reason is that type of assistance mechanism has less onerous requirements, setting everybody up for success. So because MPI allows for the full breadth of instrument type selection, we can pick, the agreement officer can pick the business arrangement that's going to set everybody up for success and achieve the results we set out to. So thank you for that question, a very good question.
That's great, thank you, Chuck. I think just looking at the clock now, we know we have a lot of other questions that are coming in. I think these may be best that we try and take some of these questions and provide responses in writing. But I want to thank everyone on the computer as well as on the phone for joining us today for our MPI webinar. We're hoping to do more of these types of interactions with the partner community around MPI, just around broader agency initiatives around funding opportunities or how to work with USAID. So we appreciate you joining us today, and we look forward to continuing to engage with you on MPI and just around the agency as a whole overall. And just as a final reminder, we have been recording this webinar, and we will post it on our MPI website hopefully sometime early next week. And we will take as many of the questions as possible that we submitted to try and provide responses and update our frequently asked questions page that we propose that's available on our website. So once again, thank you, everyone, and we appreciate your time and interest in USAID.
Good luck, everybody.
Thank you all.
Goodbye.